It is coming up on 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 following the work of the Midnight Ravers. And it is time for Back of the Book at 5 o'clock, 5 a.m.
99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm hoping that it's about 5 a.m. and you're listening to all Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
We'll talk about various things in this program. You can find out a little bit more about that stuff by going up to my website at glib.com. GLIB.COM. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 174th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program is recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in the multiverse and several other dimensions is... We are still holding at the huge total of 125 followers on Twitter or X or whatever Leon Scum is calling it now. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held this coming Wednesday, May 8th, 2024 at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has their CDC website, and it says that as of their last reading, the death toll in America from COVID-19 was 1,190,122, which is only 519 deaths from COVID-19 over this past week. That weekly number has again dropped. Maybe we're coming out of a pandemic, but it's not over. 519 deaths per week is not the absence of a problem. Pickles of the North and I are not wearing our masks as much at this point, but we are going to get our spring booster shots pretty soon. And our own Radio's Pickles of the North has been on an excursion this past week. Tell us a little bit about it, my dear.
Boy, it ended up being an extended excursion because something happened on the choo-choo train just as it was coming into Moynihan Hall, which is the new part of, I guess, the annex to Penn Station, would one say?
Or replacement or something like that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the train to Montreal leaves from there, but apparently someone had a medical emergency en route from Washington, D.C. when it almost got into New York City. And the train was delayed, oh my gosh, 2.5 hours while they took care of this. I don't know. I hope the person was all right. The conductors were all traumatized and talking about it when we finally did get on the train. Ooh. Anyway, made it up north, visited my folks. My mom is in a rehabilitation center right now. They're strengthening her walking skills. And my parents were kind of reluctant to have outside help. They're both in their 90s. They need some help with daily living now. They let our youngest brother help them a bunch, but they need professional care for medical stuff. So my mom is doing that. She's doing really well. My father, my dad's been a jock his entire life. He is very good at playing sports. He played everything, hockey, soccer, baseball, golf. He loves it all. However, he is going to be 91. And one of the things he's loved to do his entire life is ride his bicycle, which has been driving us crazy, I think, for the past, 15 years, maybe, where he's had some interesting things happen to him while he's been riding his bike. You know, getting to know a car door up close. He got doored by one of the neighbors one time, went whoom, flying into traffic. Fortunately, there was a lull in the traffic, so he was able to get up and not get hit. One time he took a shortcut through a gas station. Well, I believe he hit the back of a car on that one and went flying. And amazing that he did not hit his head either of those two times. He wears his helmet, but that can't really protect you from some things. Then I think last summer he was trying to get on his bicycle. And he went one way and the bike went the other. The bike went into the street, and this time he flew backwards, and he was wearing his helmet, but he still cracked his head on the sidewalk. And after he got back up and got back on the bicycle and went and did his errands, he decided, maybe I should tell the doctor about this. Oh, Lord. But the worst part was, while my mom is away, you know, strengthening, getting strong, he decides to try and get his bike again. And it felt pretty bad to him. Now, mind you, at this point, he's going to be 91 in just a few months. So he made a deal with our youngest brother that if our youngest brother got on the bicycle and rode it around the block and didn't have any problems, he would know it's him and not the bike. Well, it was him and not the bike. So I'm sitting in the rehab in my mom's room, and my dad's there, and he's saying, "Well, yes, I guess it's time to give up the bike." And my mother's so happy; she's so happy because, you know, as I was talking to my dad, I was saying, "You know, Dad, we all slow down. We all slow down, and your reflexes aren't what they used to be." Right? I said, "Well, I guess you're right." It's like, I guess, 91, I guess. So that's a big change, but he says it doesn't bother him as much as he thought it would, which is good, because, man, just the thought of him doing that when my mom was away is like, oh my God. Anyway, so that was a kind of a stressful trip, because we are all worried about our parents, but they are getting help from the rehab place, and they're going to be getting help from the government nursing program, which is a really wonderful thing where you don't have to pay for it because it's paid through your taxation. So, and we're hoping that she will.
And that's not in this country.
No, no, that's not here. No. But, and we're hoping that she'll be able to go home pretty soon and partake of the excellent nursing care that they have, in-home nursing care. Even the doctor comes to visit you at home, so that's really great. One of the interesting things that happened while I was on the train, I was fiddling with my, I think my Walkman is 20 years old, but it still works, so I still use it. And I was fiddling around with that and putting my little earbuds in, and there are these two young guys sitting in the seats in front of me. And they're both students. They go to university because what they were talking about, master's programs and such. So that's university. And one of them was talking about this great professor he has. And one of the interesting things that the professor has taught them is that, as he put it, well, you know, the United States was responsible for World War II, which got my attention. And the reason being, the U.S. was supposed to have a deal that they would sell oil to Japan. And this got vetoed in the Senate by one of the senators. And so they couldn't do it. And that was the genesis. I'm assuming he means the war with Japan and not the entire World War II. So this is suddenly all the things happening at the universities are making sense to me right now, because if this is what you are learning at school, there's a problem with the educational system. I just happened to be reading a comic book from 2017, and it's a Superman series, Superman. And in one of the stories, Superman is married to Lois Lane, and they have a son, Jonathan. And they go away on the July 4th weekend, and they go to all kinds of historic sites. You know, they go to Arlington, they go to the Lincoln Memorial, they go to many sites as a little family. And one of the places they go is the World War II Memorial in D.C. And Superman, of course, he's dressed in his Clark duds because they're on vacation. I think they're driving around a recreational vehicle. Only sometimes he flies it around if no one's watching. So they're looking at these plaques, and Clark says, "Why don't we trade off reading these plaques, Lo?" That's short for Lois. And this is what he reads. December 7th, 1941 became a day that thrust the United States into a war that had been raging across the globe for nearly a decade. Now, you get good information from comic books. Comic books can teach you things. You want to step in here, R. Paul?
Better information, I think, than some college professors are giving them.
Yes. And then he goes on to the rest of the plaques and talks about Pearl Harbor. But the thing is, you can read about this in the comics, and it's not going to cost you very much money to do so. You know, you do learn a lot of things from comic books. For one thing, you can learn how to read. They can help you think about things. And like that young Yutz who was saying these things. I mean, it just, ugh.
Well, they don't tend to teach geography and history anymore, I think. I know that for me, in my ancient old life, when we got into the fourth grade, it was an interesting thing because at the fourth grade, the subjects of geography and history were getting taught to us. That had not happened for the first three grades. First three grades was, you know, numbers and counting and reading and writing cursive, which they also don't teach at all anymore, and the various very basic things. And we did all of that junk. And then in the fourth grade, bang, here we go. And one of the kids said, yeah, when I was a kid and we were talking to this teacher about this, yeah, this is going to be interesting because we've never had history before, and this should be an interesting thing. Also, it made it, ooh, you're a bigger kid now. You're getting these interesting subjects. Of course, pretty soon after that, people found the history boring, but that's life. But anyway, geography they found less boring because it showed places you would go. I remember our textbook was a textbook that had a fictional kid in it whose fictional father was an aircraft pilot, And he would go to various places and they would say, and here he is in this country. And they would describe the country and where it is, the climate, all the stuff you learn in geography. And that's the way they sort of coerced kids into learning geography in those days, easing us into it. And so we knew where things were. I mean, we could find America on a map, which a significant number of people these days cannot do. Now, in the fourth grade, we did not learn details about the start of World War II. However, I could tell you this, gee whiz, you know, things, you want to say when it started, some people say it started in September of 1931, September 19th, 1931, when Japan invaded Manchuria. And then they invaded China. And the whole thing that happened in the Pacific was Japan, the Empire of Japan, as it was called then, Japan had decided that they were going to take over and form what they called the Greater East Asian Co-Prosperity Sphere. So what happened is they invaded China. And you had things like the infamous 1937 events called the Rape of Nanking, which wasn't just figurative. There was a massive campaign of rape against Chinese women by the Japanese soldiers. It was so bad that Adolf Hitler condemned it. And the United States led a coalition and they said, we're not going to sell oil to Japan now until you stop tearing up China. And this is like years after the Rape of Nanking, and they had been keeping on doing these things. And it was a thing of, geez, we have to take a stand on this. They're doing bad things. They're attacking millions and millions of people. So there was a coalition of countries, and they said, no, we're not going to support Japan by sending them oil. And Japan said, we need that oil. So what they said was, well, we know where the oil is. It's down in Indonesia, and we have a fleet. We have a navy. We can go get it. But if we try to go get it, our eastern flank would be open to attack by the American fleet at Pearl Harbor. Oh, I know what let's do. Let's bomb the hell out of Pearl Harbor so that they don't have a fleet anymore, and we'll go down to Indonesia. That's actually what they did. Luckily, the American aircraft carriers did not happen to be in Pearl Harbor on December 7th. They happened to be out on maneuvers at sea, but all those battleships got sunk and other ships got sunk. And yeah, Japan was able to just run on down to Indonesia, grab those oil fields and start pumping the oil.
So do you think if you'd been on the train with me this trip, would you have said, excuse me, young man?
I would have been tempted to, but I probably would not have because I know that, well, first of all, they're strangers and I'd be a stranger to them. And then people don't like hearing that. I'd probably have been told something like, well, he's a professor, who are you? You know, something like that, because since they're not taught history, they might not also be taught things like, what does it mean when you say someone is just arguing from authority? You know, I have the authority, so I'm right and you're wrong, even though I say the earth is flat. I am an authority on these things. So, yeah, anyway, no, I probably would not have intervened, but I would have had a facepalm moment. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. So I was reading in the April 2024 Scientific American about scientists using the Next Generation Space Telescope, which is named after a homophobe, which looks at everything in the infrared range. And they were looking at the Orion Nebula, which if you were in a place that has dark skies, you could actually see the nebula a bit with your naked eye. And then with binoculars or something, you could see a great deal more of it. And with a telescope, a hell of a lot more. And anyway, they're looking at it, and they have discovered some interesting things with there are rogue planets in there. Now, a rogue planet is a planet that is not connected to a star, like the Earth and the other planets in the solar system are connected with our sun, and we all orbit the sun. And a rogue planet is a planet that isn't orbiting a sun, it's just flying through outer space. And what they have found in the Orion Nebula are a whole bunch of binary rogue planets. And they're saying, this is interesting. There are a great many of these rogue planets. They're called Jumbos. Jumbos stands for Jupiter Mass Binary Objects. They found 42 of these things, and at least one of them here is putting out a huge amount of radio signal, and they're trying to figure out why that is. On top of which, they're saying, you know, geez, this is a star-forming region in the Orion Nebula, and we're seeing all of these rogue planets. It gives rise to questions about planetary formation. Prior to this, well, still to this day maybe, the old idea of the accretion disk that forms around a star, you know, you get a gas cloud, it starts to collapse, it gets smaller and smaller, and then at the center of it, a star starts to shine. And then you have all this other debris around it, and that starts to conglomerate and form into planets and asteroids and stuff like that. Well, they're saying maybe that is not the primary way of forming planets. Now, rogue planets are known, usually individual planets are known, but in general, they have been thought to have been thrown out of a solar system, because you get the planets whipping around in the solar system, and the big ones move around, and in moving with their gravity, they throw out smaller planets. And, you know, there's a lot of math associated with that, with how that works. And so it's generally thought that rogue planets did form in a solar system, but they were ejected by bigger planets. And now they have these binary rogue planets, and they're saying, why are there so many of them? So many rogue binary planets. And they're thinking, maybe we need to rethink the general way that planets form, because it certainly seems like these planets, these rogue planets, formed without ever having been in orbit around a star. So this is a new field of endeavor here. They're also trying to figure out how the hell it is that some of them have so much radioactivity. One idea is that maybe there's something, a moon, a satellite, orbiting one or both of the rogue planets, and somehow it's exciting the planets, because they're Jupiter size, which means they're like Jupiter, which itself has, you know, puts out radio, but one of them in this group that they were looking at puts out an enormous amount of radio energy because we could see it from this distance. I mean, it's easy for us to see the radio energy coming out of Jupiter because it's in the solar system. These things are very far away, and they're still seeing it. So that particular planet is putting out a great deal of radio energy. So we got some interesting new mysteries in outer space right now. And also, I don't know how it's worked yet, but the so-called People's Republic of China is set to launch a mission, a probe, to go to the far side of the moon and pick up a sample and bring it back to the Earth. So it would be the first time anybody's brought anything back from the far side of the moon. The Americans went up there and brought back samples from the side that we see, but the far side, we've got photographs of and everything, but we don't have any stuff from it. So the so-called People's Republic of China may grab some of that. Who knows? There are a whole lot of space probes getting launched over the next few years. Be interesting to watch. And as we hinted at the start of this program, it is May the 4th, and May the 4th be with you. So it's Star Wars Day. And indeed, yes, and there was a that's an attempt to do a Darth Vader voice at the beginning of this program. I don't know that we did it very well. But, you know, hey, we have limited resources here at the vast studios at the Martin Mance. And so, yeah, it is the middle third. I really like the middle third. It is my favorite time of the year. The middle third is the months of May, June, July, and August. It's brightly sunny much of the time, sunnier than the rest of the year, and it's warm, and I like those things. And the sun sets after 7 o'clock, as opposed to before it, which really bothers me. And so, yeah, here we are in the middle third. This is such good stuff, and this year I am hoping to get out in the middle third. I had been saying that I was going to try and walk around more so that I could go to the Pride March this year, the Christopher Street Liberation Day March, which is June 30th. However, I haven't been moving around enough, so I suspect I am not going to be in any kind of shape to go marching on June 30th.
Well, you have 2 months.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in mid-spring, of course, and the exact minute of mid-spring will occur tomorrow, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, at 3:52 a.m. Oh, boy. So at 8 minutes to 4 o'clock Sunday morning, it will be the exact center of mid-spring. And oh, boy, oh, boy. So, wowie. Yeah, the middle third started on Wednesday, and it's great stuff. Pickles of the North is away for that, but I made note of it for myself and said, whoopee, and I wished her a merry middle third when we talked on the phone. And, yes, I really like that. And that, and as I said, today is Star Wars Day, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. All right. You get it by now, I guess. But, oh, the middle third is so good, and I'll probably talk about it some more at some point during the next number of programs. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And, of course, Donnie Bonespur Trump is on trial for 34 felonies in New York. He complains about not being on the campaign trail because he has to sit in court. Oh, I have to be there for this. Yeah, you do, you criminal creature. And he takes naps a lot in court, apparently. And this is becoming something everybody's poking fun at. He keeps calling Biden Sleepy Joe, but he's the guy who keeps going to sleep in public like that. And it is reported that his lawyers sometimes nudge him awake or put papers in front of him in an effort to have him not sitting there asleep. These efforts apparently fail, because it's being reported that he sits there. Sometimes he's nodding out. And that thing of where if you're nodding out, your head goes, oh, suddenly you catch yourself and bring yourself upright and wake up fast. He's doing those, and he's sitting there with his eyes closed for periods of time. All that stuff that indicates you're asleep. So he's taking his little naps during his criminal trial. And Trump made a public statement about the trial saying, quote, well, I'm not allowed to testify. I'm under a gag order, I guess. I can't testify, unquote. And the judge, Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchant, began Friday's court session by saying that he wanted to, quote, clear up any misunderstandings, unquote. any misunderstandings Trump may have about the trial and the gag order he's under, which is to prevent him from attacking the jurors, attacking the witnesses in public, attacking people's family members who are in some way connected with all of this. And that's what it's for. And so he wants to, the judge wants to clear up any misunderstandings about the gag order. And the judge said, quote, "I want to stress, Mr. Trump, that you have an absolute right to testify at trial, if that's what you decide to do," unquote. The judge said that his gag order applies to, quote, "statements that are made outside of court. It does not apply to statements made from the witness stand," unquote. So maybe that's going to shut Trump up about that item. But, oh boy, his lawyers are probably pushing that to him. Oh, you can't testify, because they know that if this bozo gets on the witness stand, when it comes time for cross-examination, first of all, what are they going to ask him? They're going to say, "You're a good boy, aren't you?" And Trump will say, "Yeah, I'm a good boy." And, you know, leave it at that. I think there will be questions from the prosecution as they cross-examine this idiot. And he wouldn't be able to stand up to a cross-examination. He would say too much and his lawyers would freak out. And he would probably hang himself by testifying. So his lawyers do not want him to testify. In one of the civil trials, he said, "I'm going to get up there and testify and refute all of this stuff." Well, the lawyers are saying, "We don't want that." And in the end, he didn't do it because he listened to his lawyers. But, oh boy, yeah, I don't think he's going to testify. I think he will be impressed by his lawyers with the idea that if you testify, they're going to kill you. And what they can do, of course, is have a preparation where they tear him apart. At which point he will say, wow, yeah, they can do it enough so that even he would understand that he's being torn apart on cross-examination. And he'd say, geez, this is a big loss for me if I do that. I better not do that. On Thursday in court, the prosecution started to play audio of a phone call that Trump took part in. And the phone call was about the actual payment of the hush money. And I guess you can use audio in courts now. I know that it used to be that you could not use tape recordings in courts. But they are allowing it here. And this is a criminal trial. And they're allowing it here. So I guess the law has changed. Is it because it's digital? I'm not sure about this. Maybe it is. Maybe it is that. But if you wanted to fake a recording, and of course they... That was the idea originally, was that you could edit tape to say various things. Now, you can sort of find that out. I mean, the way you would do it is you would edit it on a – whatever you recorded on, you would edit it on open reel tape, which is what we used to do here at WBAI New York, and, you know, cut tape and edit programs. God, I spent so many hours doing that. And so – what you do is you, if you want to do a recording and make it sound a certain way, you cut it in a certain way. You can make it so that somebody seems to be saying something they didn't really say. And you do that with a razor blade and you cut it up. And what you could do is edit it that way. Now, you can't just hand that in because you have splicing tape all over it. And they're going to say, gee, this looks edited. So what you would do in that case is you would then dub off, as it's called. You would record from the spliced recording onto a fresh reel of tape, and then you would have a continuous piece of tape with no visible edits in it. But if you really listened to it thoroughly, you might very well hear the changes between pieces of tape. Now, I would think that it might be even easier to do with audio that's digital, because you can really take hold of the product. I edit this program. I will be editing this program, and I will be cutting out the parts where we flub things where we go fully and all of that stuff. And the thing is, there's a little tiny bit of trickery done by the editing software where it smooths things out so that you don't get too sudden a change, because otherwise you get a blip. And I'm thinking maybe at some point I should give an illustration of that, but I'm not. I better not. We have to get this thing in on time, and we're pushing it. So what happens is they apparently have changed the law, and I don't understand that. I guess I should look into that.
I would imagine they'd have experts.
That's who testified. Yeah.
Yeah, who can forensically examine these kinds of recordings and say this has not been altered. So.
Yeah, this is what they brought in. They have this guy who is an expert, and he played it, and he testified about it. They got it off Michael Cohen's phone, because he was a participant in this, and they got it off his phone, and the guy authenticates it. So, you know, in that case, why couldn't they have had it done with tape recordings years ago? A lot of things could have been different if tape could have been used in court back in those days. Anyway, the prosecutors have brought up four more instances where they say that Trump has violated the gag order. Yeah, this is the gag order that got him fined $9,000 last week. And, you know, but $1,000 per violation, so what? If he is a billionaire and they're selling his Trump media crap now, and so he's supposedly getting billions of dollars from that, $1,000 per violation of the gag order, it's nothing to him. Oh, I hope the judge has him locked up. Finding him is nothing. Locking him up, that will really have an effect on him. That'll shut him up. Because I've been reading that Trump really is horrified at the idea that he might be put into one of those orange jail jumpsuits. Oh, wouldn't that be so good? And that'd be a nice photograph to see. Donald Trump in an orange jail jumpsuit. I only hope that an orange jumpsuit becomes his permanent mode of attire for several years in the near future.
Why, he would become like the Invisible Man.
And, oh boy, other things that are happening with this person. Trump is now trying to throw the so-called pro-life groups under his campaign bus. He's taken to dodging questions about abortion, and he's just saying it's all up to the states. He had been running on how he'd appointed Supreme Court justices who had overturned Roe v. Wade and, as an aside, had done so knowing they were coming in to do that and then lying about it in the Senate. But he was informed about how badly Republican candidates had been doing when the abortion issue had come up. So he's being told, you know, if you start pushing how you did this, you're not going to get elected. So, yeah, now he's trying to get away from it, but he can't. And this week, he said he would be fine with states monitoring women's pregnancies and prosecuting them if they had abortions. Monitoring women's pregnancies. Wow! So now women under Trump would have to do what? Register their uteruses? Would women and girls in younger age ranges have to supply some state agency with monthly proof of their non-pregnancy and then get monitored if they miss a month? Yeah, talk about getting rid of big government some more, Republicans.
Yeah, I can see it now. All right, everyone, get your pads, tampons. You mail those suckers in.
Oh man.
That'll be the protest mailing.
But, yeah, I mean, this is very draconian, very 1984. 1984 didn't go this far. But wow, he thinks that he's getting away from the issue by endorsing the idea of the state monitoring women's pregnancies. Oh, man, can you imagine what that would be like?
And you cannot dismiss the things that he says because, oh, he's just talking. No, he is not talking off the top of his head. He is saying these things for a reason, and it's not because, oh, I'll just say it and it'll appease some of my base. No, these are plans. These are plans that would be implemented if he got the chance again.
And here's a little something from the Washington Post. The auditor for Trump's media company was charged with, quote, massive fraud, unquote, on Friday by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which accused the firm of being a, quote, sham audit mill, unquote, whose failures put investors at risk. The auditor, B.F. Borgers, and its owner, Benjamin Borgers, agreed to a permanent suspension from accounting work and to pay $14 million in civil penalties, federal regulators said. So this is the auditor for Trump's media company. So, well, I guess maybe some government agencies need to monitor his past tax returns and his audits and see how real they are. Oh, man. Things are really falling apart for Trump these days. I hope that continues. And I'm very glad that the House passed military aid for Ukraine. I just hope they get it in time to stop Russia. There is a little item I saw that said that Russia may be using poison gas in parts of Ukraine. What do you do then? Do we start shipping poison gas to Ukraine? This could get really bad and wild, and I wouldn't put it past Russia to be using poison gas in a war. Putin has already threatened to nuke them. So the campus protests over Israel's attack on Gaza are in the news. We all know this. Those protesters think the cops are tough on them. Ha! They never saw the TPF. The TPF was the Tactical Patrol Force, a segment of the New York Police Department that was basically the riot police, except they didn't necessarily show up to riots. Sometimes they showed up to cause riots. I know, because I was in any number of those events. So what happened was with the TPF, we have a situation where there's a bunch of disorderly people somewhere, which is what they would call it if you were having a protest. And the call would go out and the precincts would send their designated TPF people, take them off their other duties, gear them up and send them in. And they'd come in with their helmets and sometimes some extra body armor and with their nightsticks, some of which... in the early 70s, were not legal. Yes, you can use a certain type of plastic to make a nightstick that is very easy to kill somebody with. And it's very easy also to just, like, essentially tap somebody and break their arm. And there are laws of physics involved, but there's a type of plastic that can be made to a certain density where it will just break an arm very easily. Now, what'll it do to your skull? And so, the TPF was miserable. Eventually, they were nasty. They were bad people. And eventually, the city had to disband the TPF because there were so many lawsuits showing their misbehavior and their violence. And the city had to pay millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to deal with the civil lawsuits that were brought. Oh, boy, all that stuff was going on there. And, yeah, the TPF was bad. So, yeah, you think the cops today are, oh, they're so tough. No, they're not. Anyway, Israel continues to take the bait that Hamas has put out for it. And as I've said, Hamas has planned all of this. It isn't as if Hamas got, you know, all the planning done and figured out how to invade Israel and do their stuff. And then they said, okay, and then we kill 1,200 people and we take 250 hostages and bring them back to Gaza and parade them around in front of people and have bad things done to them. And then we then that's it. No, they're not going to stop at that. They're going to say, and then what happens? At least one person in the room would say, and then what happens? So they did, and Hamas knew that this was going to happen, and they baited Israel. They knew who Netanyahu is. They know he was under pressure, and he was, like, sort of getting shoved out. And they knew that he would freak out and use this as a way to stay in power, and he has. He has followed their rule book completely. So it's still going on. And, yeah, their Hamas's plans are continuing to work out. And they've got a lot of people protesting Israel, protesting against Israel's attacks on Gaza. And they've got these people delivering Hamas's propaganda to the world. It's really working out for Hamas. Some of the protesters are saying that they are pro-Hamas now. So, yeah, some of them are noticing it and saying it. They're coming out with it. A lot of them are not. They're saying, oh, no, we're not. But I think fewer of them are saying they're not pro-Hamas. A lot of people involved in these protests are, of course, not college students. There are those who are denying this. I don't know if they constitute almost half of the demonstrators, as has been said, but they are probably a substantial constituent of these demonstrations. I don't know that they're doing that well for their cause when there's video of people who are masked up with those keffiyeh scarves, using hammers to break into a building by smashing the glass panes in a door. Those optics are not good at all, in my opinion. Oh, man. You know, you want, when you do something, you want to get the world on your side. You don't want to look like an outright criminal. And that's what these guys look like, breaking in. And I think that there are indeed foreign influences playing a significant role in the protests on American campuses. I mean, it really seems like it's happening to me. And certainly Hamas propaganda and Iran propaganda are being shouted on these campuses. Now, I want to say we can't always get to everything we want to talk about on our programs. And I've been putting off some comments on a lot of what's been going on with all of this, but I wanted to comment on something. Israel staged a very limited strike on Iran last month. It was really a follow-up demonstration of Iran's inferiority when it comes to air assaults. After Iran sent hundreds of drones and missiles at Israel, half of which, it's reported, did not explode, and with 98% of them being shot down, Israel defeated Iran's air defenses to blow up some little bit of one of their big-deal military bases. This is a place that's connected with the location where Iran is enriching uranium so they can make atomic bombs someday. It looks like that very limited demonstration is to be the end of this little tit-for-tat game. I hope that's it. You know, yeah, okay, we showed you, blah, blah. You know, you don't have to go starting World War III over this, which we hope doesn't happen. Some people are concerned that the protesters are attacking Biden and that this will enhance Trump's chances in November. Wow, wouldn't that be ironic? Trump would have such protesters rounded up by the military and put in camps if he were in power. Maybe the protesters don't remember that in 2020, Trump had peaceful demonstrators tear gassed in Washington, D.C. and pushed out of Lafayette Square and Park and off the streets so he could do a photo op holding a Bible while standing in front of a church that didn't want him anywhere near them. The Washington Post columnist Dana Milbank has written in an opinion piece that, quote, "Yet the pro-Palestinian activists, through their actions, would return the author of this ugliness to the White House. They must have been doing for the past 8 years what Trump has been doing in court the past 3 weeks. Napping, unquote. Yeah, I mean, I hope that this doesn't end up with these things causing Trump to win. That'd be a disaster. Ugh.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Oh, I hear the WBAI pitching train. Oh, that harmonica can only mean one thing. It's the pitching hobos. Yes, we are the pitching hobos, and we're here to pitch. We're here to ask you to help support WBAI New York. Yes, this is WBAI New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial radio. And what we're doing here is we're asking you to help us out. We are in arrears on a lot of our bills. There is this tower fund, as it's called. And what happens with that is we have a transmitter. We have to have access to an antenna in a high place. So we have a transmitter at 4 Times Square, and it hooks up to the antenna, the master antenna at 4 Times Square, and we are broadcasting from there. That's where we do the actual broadcast that you're hearing. Please call that number now. Call that number, 1-212-209-2950. We on this program bring you, besides the science stuff that you don't hear elsewhere, we bring you other views on various things, and yeah, we don't necessarily fall into a lockstep even with WBAI. So we have our own take on things, and you get to hear that. And we bring you various items, especially the science stuff, which doesn't get covered in mainstream media at all, or if it's covered at all, it's for 2 minutes and they laugh at it because they don't understand it. We take it seriously and we spend some time talking about these issues. On the last program, we spent almost the entire program talking about an anomaly that may relate to dark energy, which may be the force that will tear the universe apart one day, and which may have other strange properties to it, which we don't even have a hint about yet. So, and on this program, we talked about rogue planets showing up in the Orion Nebula, and why are there so many of them, and why is one of them so bright in radio frequencies? Nobody else is covering this. You're not going to see this on the news programs or in most other programs. You're going to see, you know, stuff of, oh, who's going to get off the island first? And that kind of crap. We don't do that. Also, we are a part of the overnight programs, and overnight programming is under scrutiny. If we can't raise enough money, there is that proposal that WBAI basically rent out the air from midnight to 6 a.m. 7 days a week. That would wipe out all of the overnight programs on WBAI. So if you listen to the overnight programs on BAI and you want to keep us on, you got to call 1-212-209-2950. When you call them, they'll ask you for how much you want to donate. You can donate $10, $15, $20 a month, because a BAI buddy is our sustaining membership, and you would pay monthly. And then they would ask you for your credit card or debit card number. You give them that, and then you tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged. And so that's how it will work, and you'll be donating to WBAI and helping to keep Back of the Book on WBAI and helping to keep WBAI on the air. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now if it's at all possible. 1-212-209-2950. We really need your help. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next is
Everything Old is New Again, Again with Dave Kenny.
Dave Kenny, again. Anyway, we are scheduled to be back here next week. And, it's the middle third. Enjoy it as you can. It's going to warm up. And, above all, remember what that hoping the fourth is with you, Dormouse said.
Rothenberg, I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to your stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
Funny, this radio hasn't been working very well the past few days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you.
I wonder whatever became of me.
Now, will you tell me what happened on Saturday?
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoon here on WBAI.
Should be time for our favorite program.
Yes, just about time.
What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, with an invitation to you to attend a forum and rally in support of Haiti in this time of grave crisis in the First Black Republic. Sunday, May 5th, 3 o'clock p.m. sharp at First Baptist Church, 100-10 Astoria Boulevard in East Elmhurst, Queens. Come hear reports on the crisis and the way forward from Haitian leaders directly involved in resolving the crisis. Free and open to the public, donations to support the cause are welcome. That's an informative forum and rally on the crisis in Haiti, Sunday, May 5th at First Baptist Church in East Elmhurst, Queens. For further information, call 718-446-0200. That's 718-446-0200. Or visit the website www.ibw21.org. We'll see you there.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board, responsible for local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, May 8th at 7 p.m. Please join us as we work to identify and keep up with what local priorities should be. It's essential for WBAI to distinguish itself by increasing our donating members, or our already shoestring budget and overstretched staff will likely be cut, and vitally important assets may get sold. Again, the WBAI Local Station Board meeting is this Wednesday, May 8th at 7 p.m. It will be held by Zoom and includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacific calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website, wbai.org, or by using the phone, You can call 929-205-6099. That number again, 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Again, the meeting ID, 922-457-2995. And the password is 995, like WBAI's frequency. So it's 995-995-99. We hope you'll join us Wednesday, May 8th at 7 p.m. for the WBAI Local Station Board meeting.
Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York.